All right, our next lovely young lady has braved the rain to join you and I and all of us together. Dr. Kimberly Orr for Pet Chat, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Now, we really want you to have lots of folks ringing
lots
up
of phone calls, because this is a little bit of an impromptu appearance today, so I haven't prepared anything.
It wasn't your turn
advance.
On the roster.
No.
And then the roster said, no, we're going to flip that on its head.
Yeah, that's right. So anyway, hit me with your best questions.
Kimberly, I know you've been scouring around the Hunter, and there's a whole lot of things for pet lovers to immerse themselves in right now.
Yes, well, provided that the rain doesn't ruin everything through
the
week.
That's the big asterisk, isn't it? Rain, go
the
away.
There's a fair bit of stuff happening this weekend at Hillsborough Dog Park, taking a little page out of Danny Carrington's book. On Friday, we have the Morisset and District Kennel Club. On Saturday and Sunday, we have the Hunter Valley Kennel Club and the Hunter Valley Non-Sporting and Utility Dog Club shows going on there. So if you're interested in getting out into the fresh air and hopefully not the mud and the rain, should be lots of fun. So some really interesting different things happening there.
In fact, we've almost picked the wrong week to start doing this.
Yeah, you know, yeah, like it is what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
It is what it is.
And look, we know one thing, that like folks that actually have their pets for competitive purposes.
Yeah.
I mean, they are a ruthless bunch. They just like make sure that, no, my pet's the best and all of that.
A lot of work goes into training a dog, you know, like it's one of those things that the dog, you have to have the right dog, you have to have the right personality, you have to put lots and lots of hours into it. And even, you know, just with a confirmation show as you're going around the ring, there are dogs who are built really in a fantastic way that are, you know, well put together. And they can be dogs who are super anxious in the ring, so they don't enjoy it. And if they don't enjoy it, they won't come across as looking good. So I know that my dog, Finley, her sister, she has a sister or half-sister, who was a beautiful, well-put-together golden retriever, but she hated to be in the show ring, absolutely hated it. And so her breeder, you know, just sort of took her out, did a couple, you know, couple test warm-up shows, and she never warmed to it. And so she's retired her from it, because you're never going to get a good, you know, performance out of a dog who doesn't enjoy doing it.
No point wasting the dog's time, wasting yours.
Mm.
It's interesting, I mean, there are a whole bunch of things, and not just for competitive reasons, but environmental reasons, that can actually make your dog very anxious.
Absolutely, yeah. I think people don't understand, you know, a dog's world, their senses are so much more acute than ours are. So, you know, we will often see situations where dogs seem to become really anxious, nervous. They start to cower for something that we can't see. We don't see it, we don't hear it, or we don't smell it. But the dog's, you know, hearing is allowing them to hear it, or they can smell something going on different, or they can just sort of sense it. I mean, they can sense the barometric pressure changes, which is why dogs who have storm phobias often start to cower, start to become anxious and show signs of panic well before there's any, you know, signs of thunder or the clouds, you know, haven't started to roll overhead yet. And it's because they can sense those barometric pressure changes way earlier. So, yeah, so they're very sensitive animals.
That is interesting. Like you said, their senses are so much more attuned than ours, and like well before the event.
Yep. Hours.
So maybe like the Bureau of Meteorology, instead of relying on their scientific equipment, just get a couple of anxious dogs to run around.
Yeah, I mean, the trouble is that they have to be able to communicate exactly what the problem is, so or what the weather event is that's coming. Yeah.
All right, well, I guess we're not quite there yet. Sorry, guys, thought I'd help you out. G'day, Christine in Toronto. Your 14-year-old cat is peeing in the wrong spot, Christine.
Yep.
Hello. So this is a cat that's usually good.
To do it.
Yeah, okay. So usually good at litter box use. Is that right?
Christine, so
have we got you?
Hi.
Oh, hello, Christine. Can you hear us?
Yep, I can hear you.
Okay, so tell me a little bit. So this is a cat who is usually pretty good at using the litter box?
Yeah, she's only just started this in the last probably 12 months.
Okay, but that's a decent sort of amount of time.
Yeah.
Is there other cats in the house, or is she just an only cat?
She's an only cat.
Okay.
She's an inside cat.
Yeah. Have you made any changes in her, you know, litter box access or things like that? Changed the type of litter you're putting in or anything like that?
No, it's the same litter, but about 18 months ago we bought her this bigger litter box, and I'm just wondering if maybe I should change it back to a smaller one.
Yeah, so a 14-year-old cat's, the sorts of things that we worry about would be things like her ability to get in and out of it, because at 14 years old, she's probably got some arthritis coming on.
She has.
Some cats will be very offended by a litter box that has a lid on it. You know, we often think that that's really good because it's a nice dark spot, but some cats really don't like that because they can't see what's coming at them from the other side. So, you know, lots of cats don't like to have a covered litter box. So that's certainly where I would start. But the other thing is, you know, 14-year-old cats are much more likely to develop things like urinary tract infections, and it's probably worthwhile checking in with your local vet and getting them to do a urine, you know, test on her and just make sure that things are okay there as well. But I would say go back to the old litter box and make sure she's got easy access into it. And like I said, arthritis can be a real factor for some of these old girls.
Yeah, this one has got a roof on it and it's bigger than the one she had, so...
Yeah, it might be causing her a little bit of grief. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Give those a try and see how she goes.
Yeah, best of luck, Christine. It sounds, Kimberly, like just some new environmental changes for the cat there. It's going, hang on, this is a bit different.
Yeah, and cats can be very particular in their, you know, they don't like it sometimes if you change the type of litter, if you move the litter box. But even things like, you know, it's an only cat and she's an inside cat. But if you've got a new cat in the neighborhood, I recently had a discussion with a client. I said, you know, so the cat was similarly having a urinary issue. And I said, so is there any other cats in the neighborhood? Have you got any other cats in the house? Oh, no, there's just one cat that comes to the back door and they're friends. And my cat often runs away from it. And I said, okay, they're not friends. You know, that cat is causing your cat a lot of stress. So, you know, cats can be very particular about their friends and neighbors and relationships and their litter boxes and their food and that kind of thing. So whenever we've had a change like that, we want to go back to doing how we were doing things before, test that out. But I would also like to see a urinalysis done so we can see whether there's any kind of infection or proper medical problem going on.
Good afternoon, Sylvia from Boorigal. Your pony is having some problems. What's the story with your pony there, Sylvia?
Oh, hello. Yeah, she's got this lump on the side of the mouth, mm-hmm. like where the tooth is.
Yep.
And what happens is when the farrier came in, he pushed it out with his fingers. It was just like grass and food and everything accumulated behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And so he filed the tooth down a bit, and then he said that should be okay because she's then going to get her tongue around it and clear it herself.
Mm-hmm.
But it hasn't happened. The lump is there, and it's still every now and then getting bigger and bigger. So I don't know what's happening. Does it need to be filed again, the tooth? Or?
Well, I think she needs to have a proper assessment with an equine vet and dentist.
Oh, really?
Because there's a good chance that there's a tooth root abscess or something happening in there. The other thing is that they can get like cancerous lumps and masses that will, you know, form ulcerations and things like that. So, yeah, I think probably a proper workup for her. It may be that the tooth actually needs to be extracted and pulled out. Rather than just filed, if there's a you know a gap where the root is, then filing it's not probably going to you know do as much as we think. So yeah, I would see if you can get a local equine vet out to have a bit of a look at her. They may even want to try to X-ray that so that they can sort of see what's going on there in the bone. Yeah.
It's just when he actually pushed it all out, all the food out, and it was nice and flat.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, I might have to file it down again
mm-hmm.
because it might be just a little bit sore because I filed her tooth.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give it about a week so she can then get her tongue around it. But no, it hasn't happened. The lump still is there. It sort of came back again and it's still there.
Yeah.
And that.
Yeah, I'd get a, my preference would be to get a vet out to have a look at it because they can do things like, you know, just surgically debride it, take x-rays, that kind of thing, or an equine dentist if that, you know, fails.
Okay, then.
Yeah, if you can't get a vet, get an equine dentist, yeah.
Thank you so much, Sylvia. All the best with everything there. Good afternoon, Michael at Karua. Your dog is just not happy with his new bed, Michael.
No, not happy at all.
Is it the same as his old bed?
Well, what happened?
He'd
had his old bed from when he was a puppy.
Yep.
But he pretty much destroyed it.
Yes.
And it was held together with zip ties and things, and it was no longer repairable. So it's an outside bed.
Yep.
But I bought a new cover for it.
Okay.
And it was hanging down a little bit, and someone said, oh, he doesn't like the way it's hanging down. So I propped it up. Still wouldn't sit on it.
Yeah, okay.
I'd give him a treat, he'd sit on it, and then hop off. And then I gave that bed away. I went and found a bed that was exactly the same as the one he had.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. I can get him to sit on it for a second with a treat.
Yep. But he's not enjoying it. Yeah.
And, well, he used to lay on the old bed all the time.
Yep.
And now, unless I get him, make him hop on it, he won't hop on it. And then he chops straight back off.
So. I would just give him some time. Lots of treats on there.
18 months.
Oh, 18. Okay. Well, that's maybe,
not going to use it.
Yeah. But,
and the other thing is I'm not going to change his inside bed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, so I mean, 8-year-old dog. So lots of dogs who are that age, you know, don't necessarily sleep on a bed anyway. I provide a bed for my dog both inside and outside. Most of the time she prefers to sleep on the cold tiles. So it's, you know, it's possible that he's just not feeling he needs it. As you get into winter, he might decide that he wants off the cold floor and he uses it a bit more. I would, you know, just continue to do what you're doing with the treats. Make a real positive association between, the things that happen on that bed. It doesn't smell like the old bed. It probably doesn't have the same lumps and bumps and feel of the old bed. So it can take a little bit of time. Obviously, 18 months, that's a bit of time. But, you know, I wouldn't worry about it. As he gets older and he's looking for something sort of more comfortable to take the pressure off any of his joints and things like that, he will probably start to use it more. But I think, making a concerted effort on a regular basis to feed him or give him toys on the bed, you know, if he's a tug-of-war type dog, give him a little wrestle of tug-of-war once he's on the bed so you start to make a real positive association with it. Hopefully, he will adjust to it. Also, just have a look around and make sure that there's nothing that's, making him avoid that particular area. Even if the old bed, was in the same spot, but just make sure nothing has changed, that there's, not a wind chime or something that's making a funny noise that he doesn't like or, something along those lines. So,
Yeah, okay. Thanks for your time. I think he's stubborn.
Like he's stubborn, yeah. It sounds like he's very well loved but a little bit stubborn and ungrateful.
As we continue with Pet Chat, Dr. Kimberly Earle is here who has just kind of noticed that rain, Kimberly, change of environment, and we may very well start to see a few certain environmental things come up at the moment in the practice.
Yeah, wet tootsies and little sore feet. You know, when we've got a lot of wet weather around, dogs' feet tend to stay damp more often than usual. And then they tend to, lick at them to sort of try to clean them and dry them. And that obviously leads us to having problems with bacterial and yeast infections on the feet, little itchy feet. So the best thing you can do with your little friend if they're an inside dog is to try and, when they come in from outside, have an old towel, something like that, sitting by the back door and give their feet like a proper little towel dry to help them dry off faster. If they're an outside dog, just making sure that they do have a nice dry spot to lay and to sleep so they hopefully get an opportunity. Try to avoid, having large areas of standing water and mud in the backyard if you can. We do see, more parasite problems and things like that in yards where there's lots of standing mud or standing water. That's a big one for us as well. And then I noticed yesterday, maybe this morning, little mushrooms growing up in my backyard again. If your dog eats one little tiny mushroom, it's probably not going to be a major harm. But if they're starting to go around grazing on them, we could end up with a sore belly. So I tend to go through the backyard and just pick them and pop them into my green waste bin and get rid of them.
All right, so a couple of things to keep in mind there. Because, imagine if we were walking around, barefoot at the moment, we'd probably want to dry off straight away. So
yeah, it's the animals cold know different. And squishy. And, yeah.
Dr. Kimberly Earle is here for you. So if you have a question, that's the number to call. G'day, Rod at Charlestown. Your 8-month-old Jack Russell is a very excitable little dog, isn't he, Rod?
He most certainly is, Mark. Thank you for taking my call, Dr. Kimberly.
Oh, you're very welcome.
I have two dogs. One is my new Jack Russell, and we have an 18-month-old white-haired terrier cross.
Mm-hmm.
And Max, he loves him to death, but Max has a very short fuse. I know that it's sort of, a young dog and an old dog.
Yep.
Max has always been part of the house, but Monty is his name.
Yep, that's the young one.
He gets very excitable.
Yep.
He's been muted. I'm just wondering, is he going to calm down like sort of 12 months, not in 3 or 4 months down the track? Or
Jack Russell Terriers are very high energy, high activity dogs. So he will calm down eventually, whether that's going to happen in the next 3 to 4 months or whether that's going to happen in the next 12 to 18 months or whether, you know, some little Jack Russells stay very boisterous and active, you know, right through into their senior years. Just despite the fact that, you know, the wire-haired terriers are also a terrier, but Jack Russells, they're a special breed of dog. They're pretty, you know, pretty high activity and high energy dog. So they're lovely. Most of the time they're really lovely, but they can be, you know, special. So the thing to do is they're very smart little dogs, and I would, you know, use that to your advantage by trying to feed him with puzzle toys and those sorts of things, because even if, you know, it doesn't have to take 2 hours for him to get his food out of a puzzle toy, for him to get a little bit of a sense of accomplishment and to feel like he's done a bit of work. And that can be really beneficial for a dog. So even if it only takes, you know, let's say 20 minutes instead of like 2 minutes to wolf down the food out of a bowl, if you say, okay, your water, obviously we've got to feed water in a bowl, but all of your food is now going to come to you in the form of a puzzle toy, and we're going to make you, you know, puzzle it out, you will find that in most cases that's really, really successful in helping these guys to sort of start to develop a little bit more calmness, things like that, because they are a dog who was bred to work, to hunt, and when in our home situations they don't have a lot of purpose, and that can make them, it's a little bit like a child who's sort of sitting there going like, what can I do, what can I do, what can I do, what can I do? So if we give them a job, and if we help them to, you know, to earn their keep, so as such, we find that they tend to be a bit more settled. But some of that, you're just going to have to wait some of that out, because he's only 8 months old. This is the real teenagerish part of, you know, having a puppy. You know, they've and it always falls apart around 7-8 months of age. You think, oh my goodness, this dog is great when they're 6 months, right? They're house trained. They come when they're called. They know their name. And then all of a sudden, it all goes to hell in a handbasket at 7-8 months of age, and it lasts for 2 to 4 months, usually, and then it'll start to, you know, come back again. And it's really common for people to say, all of a sudden, we're losing shoes to the dog, and the dog started having, you know, toileting accidents in the house again. It's just a teenagerish phase. It's really, really natural. But you're still going to have an excited and lively and energetic dog on the other side of that as well. So, you know, teaching him now that earning his keep is good for him, you'll find that that will make your life a bit easier, hopefully.
Okay.
Okay.
Do you think once my other dog passes,
because
he is 17, he is starting to get to that level.
Yeah.
You know, and should I get another, maybe a female for him to play with, because he's always... He's always had Max there since he was a puppy, you know, and that's one thing I wasn't sure what to do.
Yeah, I think that really depends on your, you know, on your lifestyle and things like that too, right? Because adding another dog, there's a good chance that they'll learn to get along. The female dog will probably eventually take over in terms of, you know, top dog status in the house, because that's typically what happens with dogs. But it just means that you do have to be prepared to then have two very boisterous and excitable dogs in the house. For some people, that's really easy, because if you're going for a walk with one dog, it's not really any harder to take the second dog most of the time. But other people sort of go, oh my goodness, I can't imagine bringing, you know, another one of these excitable creatures into my house. So I think, you know, Jack Russell Terriers, if they've got lots of family time, they can do quite well on their own. But they also like to have, you know, a buddy. I don't think we rarely see problems with them having a little buddy at the same time. So,
Okay.
Right. Good luck.
Good afternoon, Heath. You're from Port Stephens. You are our last caller today. And your one-year-old Mastiff Woolhound likes to lick himself, Heath.
He keeps licking his paws all the time. I've checked inside his webbing and everything. And yeah, I just can't seem to see why he keeps doing it. We've checked him all over.
Yep.
And there's, you know, and I was thinking, like, what can I do to
stop that? Sure. Does he have is he getting that sort of rust red staining around the feet and things?
It's a little bit red in the webbing, but it doesn't look like, when I touch it, it doesn't irritate him or anything.
Great. Okay. So, I mean, dogs sweat from their feet. So even when it's dry and hot out, they sweat, and they've often got moist feet. And obviously with the weather, as it's been lately, there's a lot of moisture in the ground, even, you know, on a dry morning. But you get up in the morning and there's dew on the grass. The dogs walk around on that and they get their feet wet. And because of that, because the feet are warm and they're often moist, they do become a site for regular yeast and bacteria bacterial infections, and they can be quite itchy. So the infections themselves, which are usually relatively minor, but they can make the dog itchy. And when dogs are itchy, they will take that out. You know, they'll try to treat that by licking at it to get the irritation away, which obviously makes the feet wet. So we get this real vicious cycle of itchiness, licking. The licking promotes the bacterial and yeast infections, things like that. So the first thing I would say is try to get the feet nice and dry as much as possible, which is going to be hard over the next, probably the next few months, really. But anyway, it's going to be challenging. I would pop into your local pet shop or vet hospital and get a medicated shampoo, something that has some chlorhexidine in it, and or even like chlorhexidine is just it's a pink sort of surgical scrub. In my hospital, we sometimes will just dispense a bottle of neat chlorhexidine. We get people just to mix it with a bit of warm water and use some cotton balls to scrub into those toes, because that is the chlorhexidine itself will be inhibiting for the bacterial and yeast growth. And it helps to sort of dry the foot out a little bit. So we scrub that up once a day or every second day, towel dry. Don't rinse it off, just towel dry if you're using neat chlorhexidine. If you're using a medicated shampoo, follow the instructions on the bottle. And then, so the other thing is that we will see some dogs who are very, they use licking their feet as almost an emotional safety blanket, right? Like they're self-soothing themselves through foot licking. Sometimes that started when they were, they had an itchy foot, and maybe the foot's not actually that itchy now, but they're still doing that as a bit of a self-soothing sort of thing. So, see if you can distract them away from it, give them a chew toy instead of the feet to lick at. But if you're getting any of that redness or if you've got a relatively dry foot, so the dog's not been on the grass or not been outside for a while, and you open it up and it still has a moist appearance and there's any redness there or any wrinkling of the skin, then we've probably got some infection happening. So if it's bad, you want to see your vet.
All right, best of luck with everything, Heath. We've run completely out of time, Kimberly.
We're out of time, that's okay.
How exciting is that?
I know, it's good. We had lots of calls.
All right, plenty of that to talk about there. Next week, another pet chat on the way. You can call Kimberly. No, you're here next week?
Maybe. I'm supposed to be.
Yes, maybe.
I'm supposed to be.
Yes, maybe. Good stuff. All right. Thanks, Kimberly. Pet chat done and run for today.